Hi there, listeners. It's Farnoosh, and I just want to say I'm really honored that you've chosen to subscribe to So Money. I know there are a lot of podcasts out there. The fact that you're here is not lost on me. Now, if you're enjoying these episodes and you're benefiting from the advice and you want more, I've actually created something really special for us. It's called the So Money Members Club. It's an online platform where you can connect more closely with me and engage with fellow So Money fans who want to become more empowered in their financial lives. The website is SoMoneyMembers.com. And when you go there, you'll learn all the benefits, including exclusive monthly finance workshops, private group calls with me. You get your questions answered in our member community. I'm often in there weighing in, and you get instant access to all of our workshop recordings. We have a robust library that's growing. So far, we've had workshops on investing in real estate, kids and money, and how to earn more in 2024. And most of all, it's fun, positive, encouraging, all the things personal finance should be. Go to SoMoneyMembers.com, and I hope you'll join us. I'm limiting enrollment, and doors will close soon. Check out SoMoneyMembers.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with tap to pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
So Money episode 778, Lindsay Stanberry, author of Money Diaries.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Karabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life? Welcome to So Money.
Have you ever read someone's diary? Come on, you know you have, or wanted to at least. Welcome to So Money, everyone. I'm your host, Farnoosh Tarabi. Today we're talking about Money Diaries. It's a new book out by author Lindsay Stanberry, who is the Work and Money Director at Refinery29, one of my favorite websites for all things female empowerment, career, money, lifestyle, trends. Money Diaries is the book. Everything you've ever wanted to know about your finances and everyone else's. Money Diaries started as a series on Refinery 29, where Lindsay would share entries from millennial women all across the country, how they were spending every single dollar, every single cent. The book was inspired from that, and it provides up close and juicy insights into how millennial women are handling their financial lives or not handling their financial lives. We also will talk about Lindsay's own financial journey to saving over $100,000 to purchase her first home, how she is striking a balance between motherhood and her career. And if you're listening and you are thinking about having children and you're concerned about managing your career as you become a parent, particularly a mother, some advice for you. This is a topic I'm extremely passionate about these days, how women can stay in the workforce while having children. Too many are opting out unexpectedly. The cost of parenting is expensive. It's high. But how can you make it work so that you can maintain your financial independence, your financial freedom? Here we go. Here is Lindsay Stanberry. Lindsay Stanberry, welcome to So Money. I'm like beyond for Money Diaries. I've been waiting for this book for almost a year. Congratulations.
Thank you so much, Farnoosh, and thanks for having me on the show. I'm such a big fan.
Our So Money Nation is really excited to learn more about how everybody else spends and saves and invests or doesn't spend, save, and invest. And you, as the Work and Money Director at Refinery29 for many years now, you really catapulted us into like being voyeurs, financial voyeurs, which is a great way to learn. And Money Diaries was sort of this way to bring financial narratives with women in starring roles, to use your own description of what it is. And now it's a book and probably will become a movie, a line of accessories at Target. I see a future here. What do you think it is about learning how other people spend, save, invest, and that makes us curious and interested? It kind of goes contrary to what we hear, that like nobody wants to talk about money. Money's a taboo topic. Money makes us uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think that money is a taboo topic and that money makes us uncomfortable, but that people really do want to talk about it. And like you said, we give women the starring role in their own financial narratives, which you don't see many other places. And I think women are just really excited to finally have the opportunity to tell their stories. And then it's equally fascinating. It's like when you go to a party and you peek in someone's medicine cabinet, right? But in this case, you're like actually seeing the receipts of how they make it work. Or don't make it work.
So many diverse entries you've collected over the years. Everyone from an intern who's basically being supported by her family, her parents in New York City, and that I know went viral. That particular entry, people were upset. But then you also have really inspiring stories of women who are affording their own homes and creating real financial independence for themselves. As you were looking at all these entries, is it mostly good news or mostly bad news?
I think it's a lot of good news. I do think that there's a lot of self-editing that goes on. And we find that women who have really great financial success are especially excited to share their stories. Our commenters section is a little bit notorious. Our commenters are very judgmental. We try at Refinery, try to present this without judgment, but that can be tricky too. So I think that there is good news. And I also think that there's like plenty of examples of young women with student loans or low paying jobs who are really trying to figure out and make, you know, better money decisions.
What are the goals? What does financial success mean to these women? I mean, I think that's also, again, a very case by case, but as someone who's really got the 30,000 foot above ground view.
Yeah, I think it's true case by case. I think that, you know, we see them living up to some millennial stereotypes that I think are really funny. Like, you know, they really do buy a lot of avocado toast. They spend a lot of money on Ubers. They have a lot of student loan debt. But I do think that there's also this feeling of like, when a woman makes a lot of money, there's a congratulatory element to it. There's a lot more judgment too about how she spends her money. But then there's also this like, you know, you go girl, you go get what you're worth. And that's really exciting.
Have you also found, I can only speak for my own experiences and observations, is that when women tout their financial wins, I've done it sometimes on this show. I just recently read an article, where the writer is a female and talked about how she was able to send her kids to college debt free, and the vitriol that she got because people thought that she was bragging, that she wasn't cognizant of all the struggle that other people were having, that she was privileged, that I've been privileged because like I've been able to afford a home. And I find that that is interesting, because would we be so judgy of men who all the time are talking about, it's like a given. Like if you're a man and able-bodied and you have a college degree, your success is a given. But if you're a woman and you are successful and proud of that and sharing that, it can become a hostile environment for you.
I think it's really interesting. I think it feels like to me that women have to over-apologize for our privilege, and we're made to feel really guilty about that. And that's why, you know, we say phrases like, I bought this face mask, it's a guilty pleasure of mine, or something like that. Whereas, like, I don't think a man would ever apologize for buying a video game. Right? Like they just go and
maybe to his wife he'd apologize, but other than that.
Maybe. Hopefully.
I'm gonna be gone for the next 3 weeks. Sorry.
I have a new video game, right? But I do think it's really interesting that happens, and it bums me out, especially because you see it like women being judgmental of other women and men being judgmental of women. So it's like you can't win. But I think that's also why money diaries are so important and encouraging women to talk about their money, even if it's anonymously, because then that begins to kind of normalize this idea of how we spend our money.
Yes. Have you followed up with some of these women who've entered diaries and later asked, how has that practice or that exercise of tracking and writing down your week's worth of spending, how has that changed your views on money or your activities around money? Are people usually enlightened, or what happens?
Absolutely. I always tell people that I think that doing a money diary is one of like the best financial like things you can do, because it's so eye-opening. I am really someone who swipes my credit card at the grocery store and doesn't look at the total. So like forcing yourself to write it down, you don't have to publish it on Refinery 29, even though I would recommend that you do submit a money diary. But we have definitely heard back from diarists saying that they've learned a lot. One of my favorite diaries was from a young woman in LA who she is going back to school to become a nurse, but she also works full time as a naturalist, making very little money, $26,000 a year, something like that. And she lives with her parents. And it was very cute. The first diary she did, she kept buying coffee. And about midweek, she was like, I realize I've bought coffee all week. So today I made coffee for myself. And we did a follow-up diary with her that's published in the book. And she says the same thing, actually, that, you know, she's kept up this habit of making coffee at home because she realized how much she was spending on it because of the money diary she did.
Wow. Just to summarize for listeners, some of the incredible profiles you have in the book: a hustling single mom earning $60,000, a female sales executive making over $230,000. Curious to know how she feels. Does she feel rich? I find that people who make over six figures are not always feeling like they've made it. I also read on Twitter, I think, that as you continue to collect these diaries, and this is an ongoing thing, and listeners, if you'd like to submit, you're looking now for teachers, right? You want to focus on maybe some public service workers, perhaps?
Yeah, definitely. We're always looking for a diverse mix. That's what makes an interesting story. We're also going state by state this year. So we're about halfway through all 50 states, which is really exciting. And we aim to publish a range of incomes. Obviously, our high earner diaries are our most popular. But I really love the ones from the women who are just, you know, struggling to make ends meet.
Well, let's talk about you a little bit, Lindsay. First, what drew you to personal finance? Was it the journalism or the money finance? Not the money that you make as a Was it the storytelling? Was it journalism, or was it the interest in personal finance?
I think it was a little bit of both. I totally fell into this. As you mentioned earlier, I wrote a story about how my husband and I saved $100,000 to buy our first apartment in New York City. And I wrote that story really because I wanted to change the narrative around millennials and money. It didn't seem fair to me that everything was always just that we were bad at money. And I wanted to share my own personal example of how I wouldn't exactly say I'm good at money, but I'm not bad at money. I'm a good saver. My husband's a really good saver. So I wrote the story, and when it published, it did really well, and our readers really related to it and were inspired by it. And it made me kind of think about that. I hadn't really seen that kind of personal finance storytelling before, and I wanted to do more of it. But then it also made me realize all the holes in my own financial education that I wanted answers to. So like, I'm a really good saver, but I'm not great at investing in the stock market. And I sign up for my 401k, but I don't know how it's invested. So I have such a privilege at Refinery that I said, you know, this is something that interests me. I want to write about it. I think our writers care about it. I'm going to start reaching out to female financial advisors and getting them to help me understand my finances. And then I'm going to translate that to the readers into kind of a storytelling technique that appealed to me, which was like, you know, I'm going to have a little bit of tough love and it's going to be very clear the way we explain these difficult concepts. But I'm also not going to judge you and I'm never going to tell you not to buy a latte because that drives me crazy.
Although the latte factor is pretty powerful. Substitute for whatever you want. Like, I love my latte too. I had one this morning.
Yes.
But, you know, there are those little leaks, those little recurring expenses that we have that that can really add up. Back to your personal finances, you guys saved $100,000 to buy that house or that apartment, which you chronicled, and that kind of was the beginnings of Money Diaries. But how did you do that? You said your husband's a really good saver. You're like good with money. What were three takeaways from that savings experience? How long did it take you, by the way?
It probably took us about 8 years. And it wasn't like a conscious thing that we like sat down when we first got together and we were like, we're going to save 100K. It was more that we like looked at our bank accounts one day and realized that with a little bit more aggressive saving, we could get to a place where we could afford to buy an apartment. It was a combination of things. My husband at the time worked full time, but he also freelanced and he saved every penny he made freelancing. And I was working in book publishing at the time. And this was also a different era where bonuses were much bigger than they are now. And I would get pretty healthy bonuses and I would take all that money and put it into savings. And then at the same time, it was a lot of like small savings tricks. Like we didn't buy lattes. We were really conscious about not eating out very often. We never go to brunch, which was just shocking for people. We never take cabs. My husband would like go above and beyond to avoid paying a service charge or a toll. So it was those little things that we were always very conscious about. And, you know, at times it was frustrating, you know, would have been nice to like, sometimes I'd walk by fancy restaurants on my way home from work and think it would be so nice to sit down there and have a fancy dinner. But we also have a wonderful time. We still do. I have a 2-year-old now and we sit down every night and have dinner. We light a candle and we set out cloth napkins and we sit down and eat and together. And it's really important to us and really nice thing that we do.
With your 2-year-old? That's impressive.
Oh. After he goes to bed, we do not know.
I'm like, I need to take a page. That's your next book. That's really great. 8 years. That's impressive. The consistency and the stick-to-itness that you had there. That's really inspiring. And yeah, having a home that's yours in the end feels better than any food tastes.
I think so. It really was important to us. And we actually ended up selling that apartment 2 years ago, right before my son was born. And we were able to make some profit on it and move into a bigger place to fit all three of us. So that was also a really good feeling.
There you go. What would you say today is your money mantra, Lindsay, as somebody who is a mom, is a woman, has a career? I later want to talk about the how-to of all of that, because did you read recently that there are so many women that are arriving at motherhood, not thinking, not knowing, not anticipating the cost and leaving the workforce as a result?
It's
so expensive. So I want to, that's been my latest obsession, is trying to help those people, those women. But tell me a little bit about where your mind is right now when it comes to money. If you have like a financial philosophy currently.
I would say that I have found that it's much more difficult to be careful with my money now that I have a child. My time is more precious than it used to be. So that's been really hard. I actually write about that a little bit in the book, this kind of like lack of time. I'm going to throw money at problems in a way that I never did before. And thankfully, I have more disposable income than I used to, but still, that's such a weird feeling. So I would say that these days, like, I'm really focused on making more money because I think that I have this like this person, this extra person that I really want to be earning for. And I want him to be able to have anything he wants. My parents are really incredibly generous with my brother and I would love to be able to provide that level of comfort and security.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Did you know that I'm a podcast host and also a mind reader? Because I know that you want to grow your portfolio, to deal with the rising costs of inflation, to pay off your debt or your mortgage. You want to attack pretty much anything standing in the way of you and your financial freedom, right? Well, here's one solution: more knowledge. This podcast helps, I hope. And you can use Yahoo Finance, where you can get access to the news, data, and tools that you need to help reach your definition of financial freedom. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. They're the number one finance destination, and I know because I worked there for many years, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, customizable charts, so much more. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com. For the longest time, I dreaded buying bras. It was like shopping for jeans. Impossible. You want a bra that's sexy? You want a bra that's comfortable? You can't have both. Well, now you can, thanks to Third Love. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, the ick, the ugh, out of bra shopping. That's why they make solutions for every bra problem or brablem. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school. Get smoothing, you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made with premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a AA cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. The weather's getting warmer as I record. It's a nice 73 degrees on the East Coast. So finally, time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and, fingers crossed, hello to shorts and tees. And I need to update my wardrobe for the long haul. And, you know, I don't want to spend a fortune. So luckily, I found Quince. I'm honest. I've got a lineup of timeless pieces from Quince that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year. I'm talking premium European linen dresses, blouses and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and tons more. Best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. I have t-shirts from Quince, pajamas from Quince. My very chic and fashionable sister-in-law, Hannah, her whole closet is Quince. And people often stop us and ask, where did you get this? Don't tell me the price. And then when I do, they're shopping on quince.com. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/somoney for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/somoney to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/somoney.
Oh, at the same time, though, make him know what it means to work for something.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I don't want to spoil him.
Right. But you know, I hear what you're saying. And I love that. I love what you are saying, because what I'm hearing is that motherhood has really inspired you to become more of a financial badass. It is circumstantial. It's like it's an instinct. It's a need. And you're pursuing it. That's also the glory here, because like, I don't think any mother is like, I want to just unprovide for my kids, right? We want to overprovide if we can, but then the question is how. And so what's your how?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, work hard, negotiate better, make sure that I'm making smart decisions on how I'm working, make sure I'm making smart decisions on how I'm spending. I think those are the big things that I think about.
Well, obviously you have to negotiate, and you talk about that in Money Diaries, the importance of doing that. And so few women do relative to how many employers expect us to. It's part of the game.
Yes.
Play the game.
It is.
But you're right. It's also about productivity, valuing your time, having a clear framework around what is work, what is family time, non-negotiables, as I say. Like, I don't travel for more than 2 days consecutively unless it's a really big financial win to be able to do that.
Absolutely. And I think that makes like having a fully funded emergency fund and really be thinking about like life insurance and retirement plans is even more important. Being buttoned up in your financial life once you have a kid is like, it goes from being like a nice thing to do to like essential.
Back to the Money Diaries, do you get the sense that many of the diarists have a lot of ambition, career ambition? That I know a lot of the profiles are of women in their 20s. But as they get older and we're having kids later, we're marrying later, do they have this expectation that they'll be able to keep up with their careers? There is a desire there. I ask this because it's going to lead me to my next question. And I don't know if this is anything you've covered yet at Refinery 29, but this struggle that women have to stay in the game while having kids and how to create that bridge.
Honestly, I'm not sure the Money Diarists get into ambition very often. Sometimes they do. But oftentimes they spend more time talking about skincare and exercise. Maybe that's worrisome. I'm always jealous of the Money Diarists because they have only the ones without kids. They have so much time. But I think that like in general, it's kind of this feeling of like, because there is that excess of time that they've got, that I think that they don't understand kind of what comes next with motherhood and a lack of time, right?
Or just investing in yourself, right? So I wonder if there is a way to extrapolate from some of these entries, like are they going back to school? Are they buying books? Are they taking courses? Are they going and paying a fee for a networking event? Are they going to a conference? I mean, going back to when I was in my 20s, I always knew that in my 30s, I wanted to try to have a family and I wanted to be at the forefront of my career still and parenthood. How? I had the sense, because I had all these really great female mentors, that the harder I work in my 20s to build seniority, the more likely I could call my own shots. Now, I didn't know I was going to be an entrepreneur. I thought I would probably still be working for an employer. But even then, I was like, if I've paid my dues to an extent all through my 20s, I've worked harder than the next person. And then I get to a place like 35 and I'm pregnant and I want to take 6 months off. No one's going to be upset about that or judge me. Or if they do, like, too bad. I'm invaluable. They have to deal with it. And so that kind of thinking really helped me. Now, it wasn't a financial move. It was more investing in myself so that I could become just a force in my career that I could have then like afford this flexibility in my 30s. It was a theory. It did play out accordingly. But I think that that's something that we really need to like educate, especially with the young women early on about that. Don't waste time. Stop watching TV. go out there. Meet also invest in your relationships. Like meet a great partner in crime because you're going to need that person to support
Absolutely.
You. Like take your dating seriously. I wish I had. And I got lucky and I won the lottery on that front. But it was not because I pursued it actively. It kind of fell on my head.
I think that what you did was really smart. I don't think most women are doing that. I just don't. I think that they should be. I write a little bit about preparing for maternity leave in the book. I think that these are things that you should be thinking about well before you ever decide to have a child, to start trying to have a baby, because I agree with you. Seniority is so important. You know, being someone that people already know works hard and can be trusted gives you so much more space to do what you need to do when you do have kids.
Right. I mean, if you're just coasting in your 20s. I mean, not asking for a raise, not working hard for the promotion, not jumping ship from one company to the other because you're too comfortable. But you know, that's the best way to advance in your career and make more money and get more leadership roles. Like, yeah. Do that, be hungry for that. Because then and this is only if you decide you want to slow things down for whatever reason, because you want to transition to starting your own career or have a family, or you have to take care of your parents because they're also aging and may need your help, that you have that breathing room now in your 30s that you've earned because you've worked so hard in your 20s. And that's given you like great, really great momentum and now leverage.
I think it's so important. I think the problem is that the advice is always to lean in, right? And that's not exactly how it works.
No.
So I think that like having examples like you telling your stories of how you made it work. When I was in my 20s and I looked around and saw, first of all, I didn't see many working mothers. And when I did, I didn't really like the life I saw them have. And so when I did finally get around to having a baby, I really wanted to do it kind of my own way. And I'm really lucky at Refinery because I have a lot of support and, you know, they understand that, you know, I might not be here at 6 p.m. at night because I'm, you know, home with my kid, but I am up at 6 a.m. sending emails to make sure, you know, work is getting done. And I think that that's really important to have when you're a working mom, because, you know, kids work on their own schedules and it's not necessarily the 9-to-5, the corporate world.
Someone just said the other day, as a parent, I'm the chief of staff of my child.
Yeah, right? Like all the things you have to do.
All the people you have
crazy.
To hire, or like, you know, the schedules you manage and the task force. Yeah. So what, not to get negative, but what would you say was your financial failure in your life that taught you a lot?
I think like every time I buy lunch at work is a financial failure. It never tastes that good. And I could have just made a sandwich at home. I think it's those little things that you just kind of like fall for accidentally and aren't thinking. It's those mindless moments that drive me crazy. I think I've been really lucky though, because I have great parents who've always been really supportive, and I have a husband who's very careful with his money. And so I've never had like a big, huge mistake.
Take us back to childhood a little bit. You've talked about your parents a couple of times already and in such positive light. I would love to learn a little bit about your first foray into the world of finance as a kid. Like, did you have a lemonade stand? Do you remember a particular conversation or anything like that?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard for me to talk about money when I was a kid because it wasn't ever a thing. My parents never really made talking about money part of the conversation. I think that they're shocked that this is what I do for a living. Honestly, they're wonderful and they're so supportive, but yeah, I think that they think it's funny. I was having dinner with my dad on vacation recently and he was explaining to me what ETFs were. And I was like, Dad, that's what I do for a living. I write about this stuff all the time. I know what an ETF is. So I honestly, you know, for better or worse, we didn't talk about money and it wasn't really a thing until I went to college. I graduated from college and began earning money on my own and met my husband. And one of the earliest money memories I have with him is that he called me up. We were about to move in together. And he called me up because he wanted to make a big purchase and he wanted to make sure I was okay with him making the big purchase. It was like, he was in a band at the time and it was like an amplifier or something. I couldn't even tell you if he made the purchase, but I remember it being just like the biggest thing for me that he trusted me enough to call me up and tell me about this. And that was like kind of the beginning of us talking about money and our lives together. And I know that money and relationships can be really awkward and goodness knows we've had our moments, but I really love the times when we talk about money in terms of like planning for things we want to do and, you know, buying and selling our house and buying our new apartment. And it's, to me, it's really romantic.
And really respectful. You can be from complete different backgrounds, have different points of view, but just by sending a text or calling or checking in and saying, what do you think? Even if you know they're not going to agree, like you're giving them the space and the opportunity to voice, which is really great.
It's really important.
Our sponsor for this podcast is Chase Slate, and they did a survey recently and actually found that a majority of millennials, over 3/4 of them, have recently made a purchase and shared it on Instagram. Mm-hmm. You're not surprised. But I always want to ask guests, is there something that you recently purchased that maybe you didn't share it on Instagram, maybe you did, but you did share it in some capacity because you were really excited about it?
I just had new bookshelves installed in our apartment, and I did share that on Twitter because I was really excited about them.
Nice.
So, and that was a big, that was like a several conversations about whether or not we were going to actually do these bookshelves. So it was a big purchase for us, but they look really good. I was really happy with them.
That is a great investment. Well, A, because books are important, but also I think it was in Malcolm Gladwell's, one of his books, where he said that just having books around the house with kids in the house, they grow up being more academic.
That's great.
They don't have to read the books, but just being around books.
It's they just need to be around them.
Yeah.
I was in the bookshelves are in the bedroom, and we also have CD shelves. Like I mentioned, my husband was in a band, and we were like the last millennials with a CD collection. And my son looked at the CDs and went, so many books. not book.
Can we give you some of our CDs? Because we need to downsize.
No, you actually can. The CD shelves are full. And so we are not allowed to bring any more CDs into the house.
Before we wrap here, I wanted to do some So Money fill in the blanks with you, Lindsay. This is how I coronate every guest. before they leave, and it's really fun. So just fill in the blank. If I won the lottery tomorrow, let's say $100 million, the first thing I would do is?
I would start angel investing in female-run businesses.
Ooh. One thing I spend my money on that makes my life easier or better is?
I have a housekeeper, and it's a game changer.
Yes.
When she comes, it's the best day of the week. She comes twice a month, but it's just, and
same.
I love her. She's wonderful.
Yeah. All right. One thing I wish I had learned about money growing up is something you wish you had learned earlier in life.
I wish I knew how much it costs to really sustain the lifestyle that I grew up with. I wish that I had been encouraged to kind of pursue a more high paying career. I was definitely of that generation who was told to follow their passion, which has been great, but money is nice too.
Well, I think having this book is a great way to put your stamp on the world in addition to your great work at Refinery 29. Like a book for me, at least it was a huge platform, you know, to be able to say you're an author now. That's really exciting.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. And you wrote this book in like less than 6 months, right?
Yeah. Less than 6 months.
That is also a skill.
Yes. But a skill I don't want to repeat. Let's not brag about that.
Okay. We'll give you more time for the next one. What do you think will be your next? Yes. What do you think has been born out of all these conversations that would merit another 200-page book or so?
I mean, I wrote double this. So I think there's like there's a second book waiting in the wings. I think that the conversations are ongoing. Like, I think you can talk more about like how our relationships with money develop as our relationships get stronger. Like, so many ways that money impacts us in the workforce, all the different ways that women are discouraged from being, you know, primary breadwinners or being ambitious. Like, I think we could talk about this and talk about this forever. Hopefully we'll see some progress, and we should. It's so important.
I love it. All right. And when I donate, I like to give to blank because
I like to give to organizations that help children. My father's a pediatrician, but also, you know, they're in a situation where they can't help themselves. They're at they're most vulnerable. So I think they're a really important group to help.
And I'm Lindsay Stanberry, author of Money Diaries. I'm So Money Because.
I'm Lindsay Stanberry. I'm the author of Money Diaries. And I'm So Money Because I encourage women to talk about their finances and take control of their money.
Wonderful. The book came out yesterday, September 4th. So go get your copy, everybody. I actually have a free copy that I'll be giving away to one lucky listener. So go over to SoMoneyPodcast.com and get on this particular episode page and you'll learn how to win the book. Thank you so much, Lindsay. Have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Pranush. I really appreciate it.
Thanks again to Lindsay for joining us. The book again is Money Diaries. You can go to moneydiariesbook.com and follow Lindsay on Twitter at L.E. Stanberry. All this info is back at SoMoneyPodcast.com, including how you can win a free copy of Money Diaries. Make sure to go to the episode page for Money Diaries for Lindsay Stanberry. And in the description there, I will give some next steps for how to win the book. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. And I hope your day is so money. Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with tap to pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.